Welcome to the Minibait Gang Podcast, episode 182. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on again with Tim Elliott.
We're grinning and picking down here in Lakeville.
Graham thickens. Can barely hear you. Phil Wilson.
Just like, oh, we're on Prairie Home Companion. Sweet.
Yeah. Well, the state fair just happened, and you know.
Ah, there you go. You know, either that or we're on Hee Haw, one of the two.
On Hee Haw.
Yeah. That was definitely more of a bluegrass kind of vibe.
Yeah, you know, I wanted something kind of upbeat and all right. You guys are always teasing me about my music, but
well, it's because we have no lives. Yeah.
And plus, I can't get Madonna, so I can't make you happy, Phil.
Oh, trust me. I think we could do without Madonna.
Yeah, no kidding. So, hey, Precious Status, Julie Gilbert Niemer is her name, or she won the Precious Status won the 2012 yeah. Minnesota Cup Grand Prize. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was quite an event last night.
Well, tell us about it. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, it was it was held at the McNamara Center at the U, and gosh, it looked like it was full. I mean, it was, 600-700 people. And the final or the winners of each category, the finalists in each category got to go on stage and do a brief, 2 or 3 minute summary of what they were all about. And of course, Precious Status was the high tech division winner, and each of the other division winners got to do their thing. And there were speakers, and the Entrepreneur of the Year Award was given, the U of M Entrepreneur of the Year Award. The president of U, Eric Kaler, spoke early on.
Mm.
Rick Cupcella was the MC, which was awesome. They haven't had an MC, I don't think, before.
Did he bring any news with him?
He brought the news in his back.
Okay.
Did just he bring any news?
he has a good called Bring Me the News.
I know, yeah.
Quite nicely recently.
I think that's great. That's brilliant, Steve. Nice job.
Yes.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, he has a site called Bring Me the News.
Bring Me the News. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so he emceed, and Eric Kaler spoke, and was quite good. And then the dean of the Carlson School spoke, and I thought it was really cool that the Entrepreneur of the Year Award, which was presented by Gary Holmes, is a former Gopher football player starting nose guard, a guy by the name of Bob Coughlin, who had a success with a company called Cross Telecom that he sold a few years ago.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
$200 million in revenues or something. And I didn't really follow that story, but this guy was a cool guy that gave a really inspiring talk and paid tribute to his wife, and who I guess was a tennis star at the U. And so that was pretty cool. But yeah, the highlight was definitely the naming of Precious Status. They took a break in the middle this year, which I thought was quite good. So like a networking break about halfway through, and then they called people back up, and they took an audience vote too. And I didn't catch who won the audience vote. I thought it was probably Precious Status, so I voted for them, and I thought, whoa, there's a lot of energy here around Precious Set. I could kind of feel it in the air,
Yeah.
And enough, they pulled it off. But there were many impressive startups. This social media site for Black Americans, the Toloku, I believe is pronounced.
Yeah.
These guys were impressive. I wanted to go chat with them afterwards, but I couldn't get to them. But they've got a good thing going there, and many others. The environmental startup, I can't think of its name right now. I should get my notes out that won that category. What's it called?
EnviroLastec.
Well, there was one called LifeFloor. Oh yeah, EnviroLastec. Yeah, that's the one. Yep. Thermoplastic compound pellet technology.
Yep.
for applications, including replacement of wood. The other one in the general category was life floor. Right. And Ognific in the student category, Salome Tibebu, I believe it's pronounced. She was impressive as well. And Toloku in the social entrepreneur category.
Well, we'll put the links in the show notes because I'll tell you, folks, if you're listening and you have any interest in local Minnesota startups, go to this 2012 Minnesota Cup Division winner page and look at not just the winner, but look at the runner-ups and the honorable mentions. Just go to the sites. I mean, there's some pretty impressive startups here.
Yeah, there absolutely was. But the highlight for me coming in the door was I ran into Scotty Olson on his row bike.
Oh.
And I thought, okay. And he's dressed in his cycling gear and got his helmet on. And he ended up wheeling his bike in to keep it inside. But, yeah, I shot a picture of him and tweeted that. I hadn't seen him in a few years. I go way back with him 20 years ago, Mr. Rollerblade. So that was kind of fun. Fun deal. And he was, seeing all kinds of people he knew there, obviously.
Oh, I'm sure.
So it was an awesome event. Congratulations again to Dan and Scott, who run the event, and Matt Hilker, who's the guy who's really doing all the heavy lifting now as well. So good show, guys.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and then yesterday was the big announcement of the Amazon Kindle Fire, and I couldn't help but think Tim was paying attention. Were you, Tim?
Yeah, they really put the gauntlet down in price.
Oh man, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean $299 for the the higher end larger version.
Yep.
And then that $499 one, which of course is the the starting price for the new iPhone or the new iPad. You get 4G on it for like $50 a year or something. No.
Yeah,
you don't get a lot of usage, but you get enough to keep Kindle books updated and a little bit of web surfing. You're not going to be watching any videos on the 250 megs, but that's pretty interesting.
That's a great price point.
Well, they're great. They're fine tablets, but I still haven't seen anything that's like, oh yeah, that'll really get them some big share.
Well,
yeah, no, the pricing I think is the biggest thing. So if Apple doesn't do the smaller version at a lower price point, which of course is rumored, then I think this holiday season a lot of people are going to buy these things because they're like, half the price.
Right.
Well, and especially I'm so torn because on the one hand, I love my iPad, but on the other, I love Amazon because I buy just tons and tons of stuff from Amazon. And oh, by the way, I use tons of Google apps. And so I love those guys too. So, and all three of them are jockeying for position in terms of who's going to be the dominant device front end and who's going to be the back end to supply, media and everything else.
Yeah. Well, I still don't know if there's going to be a mini iPad.
It's the iPad cargo pocket edition.
Yeah.
Well, I just get bigger cargo pockets. That's what I say.
They'd probably call it iPad Nano.
I don't think so.
Now the Nano, I guess, is the iPod Touch, isn't it?
I think it'll be the mini pad. I think it'll be.
Well, it'll be for men and women on the go. The mini pad.
Okay. So they have the mini pad and the maxi pad.
Well, there you go. I don't know about you guys, but I kind of was impressed with the paper white. I thought that was kind of nice.
Yeah. Cool. No, it's good to see that they're continuing to innovate with the ink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because for reading books, that is really still the best way.
Yeah.
It is. Forever on battery life. It's easy on the eyes, it's
easy. It's compact. It's thin. It's a great way to read.
Well, see, the thing that I get torn about with the iPad is that even though it's got incredible battery life, I'm still cognizant when I'm reading, especially when I'm sitting and reading a book, that I'm checking the battery.
Well, it's because you're a hypermiler. You always.
Well, no, I know. Yeah, I know. But I mean, if you're sitting there, especially when I'm on a plane. and you're sitting there reading, and you realize, geez, I'm now down to 49% battery, and I got another hour and a half left of the ride.
Should be fine though. Doesn't that get like 8 or 10 hours anyway?
Yeah, it does. But if you have to turn the screen brightness down, which of course takes away from the experience.
Can I have, you know, I love Steve like a brother, but one thing I've never done, Steve, is take a road trip with you. Do you like shout out mileage and battery life and stuff like that on a road trip?
Hey, let me just tell you, I'm aware. I stay aware. I never get caught.
You're one of those guys that we would pull. We would, you know, we'd be like, you know, hightailing it across the Vegas desert, you know, the Nevada desert. And we would, you know, get to a gas station and go, dude, you know what we got in mileage?
Well, no, not quite. But, you know, what drives me crazy is when I'm with somebody and they go, oh, geez, I'm down to 20% battery. No, wait a minute. You knew we were going to leave and we were not going to be by some place you could plug in for like 8 hours. Why did you run your battery down to nothing? I don't get it.
It could be like me because my Evo battery is so close to shot that I get about 20 minutes of battery life.
Oh, well, speaking of phones, I got to tell you that Nokia, the Windows Phone 8, the new Lumia 920 and 820, that Lumia 920, even though I don't think I really like the interface, you know, the Windows 8 mobile interface, that Lumia 920 looks like one hot phone.
I think that the thing that's going to really sell it is the camera, which is a crazy high megapixel deal.
Yeah. Except did you see that how slammed they got for faking the video and the images?
Oh, geez. Yeah. Well, that happens all the time though.
No, I know.
In commercials, but I think the camera's going to really sell it, that phone. And we'll see. I mean, I think with all the problems that you know, that Google will have with defending Android in court, I think there's an opportunity for someone like a Microsoft to come on.
Yeah.
Oh, so clearly do I. There's an opportunity. You know? Yeah. I mean, it's like it comes litigation free.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's could be better timing for Microsoft to see that patent come to a conclusion, that patent decision. So
yeah,
I like it.
Well, what about the Razer, the new Razer, the three new phones that they came out with, Motorola, it got no buzz.
Well, I think it's because you named it the Razer, for God's sake. You know, why?
It's a good name. It's a good brand.
It's cool.
I think of the skinny flip phones. So.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I think it should be the Razer 1247A.
Oh, that's much catchier. That comes tripping
that's
right
what
off.
That's what the Japanese would do, is they just number it.
Yeah.
So. But you look at the Razer HD, that is as hot looking as the iPhone, the new iPhone 5 supposed design. It's thin, it's got a huge screen. I'm just surprised that it didn't get any buzz.
Well, nothing's going to get any buzz until after Apple, the 12th. Next Wednesday. It's not, nothing's going to get any buzz.
Well, no, I think that things are getting buzz. It's just that, a bunch of phones that are on Verizon is not as big of a story, I guess, in a week where, Amazon really kind of dominates the news cycle as far as tech.
Yeah.
And then the Nokia got pretty good, play because it was the first announcement of the week. So they got lost in the middle of the news.
Yeah. Huh. Well, let me ask you. Well, just the rumors alone on the iPhone is enough to drown out a lot of announcements. But let me ask you guys. And I know Steve and Graham, you love your iPhones. But if you had to choose a phone that wasn't the iPhone, let's say it never existed, what phone would you carry?
I'd get the Samsung Galaxy S3.
Yeah,
even though too. the size of a small paperback.
Yeah, yeah, I would. I think I would. Yeah,
cargo pockets, baby.
Yeah,
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 yeah, I probably would.
If I had to get an Android phone, which for one of my clients I may have to, I'd obviously go for the latest and greatest and hopefully get them to pay for it.
Jim, what about you?
Yeah, no, I like whatever the Nexus is of the moment, and it's getting long in the tooth now, so I'm sure they're gonna have a new one coming out soon. But what, you know, that pure Google experience unlocked, you know, quad band or at least tri-band, so you can use it wherever you're traveling. I think, you know, that would be my choice. But right now, the Galaxy S3 is the top of the line, so I'd probably go with that if it had to be this moment. But I think, you know, realistically, I would wait for the next Nexus.
Yeah. I think I would be carrying the Nexus.
What, the Galaxy Nexus or whatever the new one is?
Whatever the new one is.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
It's so hard to keep track of all those fragmented Android phone situations.
Well, you know, I can see it comes down to me. You know, the problem is that, you know, I am waiting to see what the iPhone 5 actually looks like, you know, because I am due for my upgrade. But the problem I have with it is, you know, I mean, there's no doubt I'm an Apple fan, but geez, there's so many things I got to give up because I'm constantly frustrated by the integration of Google and iOS. Constantly frustrated because it's just not a great experience. Whereas on the Android platform, it's a great experience.
Yep.
So it's kind of a frustrating. And I quite frankly use turn-by-turn navigation, and I don't want to have to pay for it.
Well, I don't think you will in iOS 6, but...
but it won't be as good. It won't be as good.
Well, I mean, there's trade-offs to everything.
There's going to be a voice command inside the turn-by-turn directions with the new Apple Maps. It's going to be like, oh, no, wait a minute. This isn't it. Go back.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Siri voice will be the voice you'll hear for the turn-by-turn stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I could just say, turn right on. No, wait a minute. That's not it. I'm sorry.
Well, okay, so here's another segue. And this is going to be a segue into our guest because, you know, the one thing that really strikes me out of everything that we've talked about, and I'm including Precious Status in this too, you know, the Kindle Fire and the Windows, the Nokia Lumia 920 and the Razer and all of that, is that core to people's expectation now is great design. And design thinking is permeating every industry. Everybody's thinking about how do we make our products not only function well, but look and feel and be something desirable. And tell us about Tom Gerhardt that we're going to have on, Graham.
Yeah, well, Tom and his co-founder, Dan Provost, run a design practice in New York City called Studio Neat. And these guys are all about small. They don't want to be big, but they believe in simple design and keeping things simple. And they had no experience, making products, really. They had been architecture undergrads at Texas A&M.
Oh.
They both ended up in New York City in grad school. I think one went to Pratt and the other one maybe NYU or I can't remember now and got into like digital stuff, digital design and so forth. And but they sort of accidentally came up with a product that they really like called the that they needed themselves, which they called the Glyph, and it's a tripod adapter for the iPhone that they wanted for themselves. So they set out to design it.
But it's also a stand. It's also a cool stand.
It's a very cool stand when you want to do FaceTime or something and have it sitting upright on your desk or table. But so they put it out there. They were one of, if not the first consumer product on Kickstarter in late 2010. And I think they had a goal of like, I don't know, 30 grand or something.
No, it was 10 grand, I think.
It was really modest. And they ended up, you know, rocketing to like 137 grand they raised, which at the time put them in like the top three Kickstarter projects. And they were just doing something for themselves that they liked and they thought other people might like. So that was the beginning. They've since done another product, a great stylus for the iPad that enables you to draw as if you were using a dry marker on a whiteboard. That was a big hit. And then they got into the app business, and they actually developed a pretty cool app, which you can read about in my post. It's called the Framographer for time-lapse and stop-motion movies. Very cool, you know, $2.99 app. So anyway, MCAD, my buddy Rob Davis over there, the director of communication, they find these guys and they think, we got to have these guys come to town and talk to our, you know, at one of our visiting artist lectures. And so they snagged him to come to Minneapolis. It's Tuesday evening, the 11th. And I wondered if either one of them had connections to Minneapolis. Turns out Dan Provost does, has relatives here, but neither one of them are from here. They're just coming to speak at the invitation of MCAD. So,
Great. Yeah. Well, we'll have to make sure they don't accidentally fly over.
Yeah.
You know, because they're coming from New York and we're flyover country.
That happens.
So. Well, let's bring Tom on and have a chat with him and see what's up about next week. But so,
hello,
Tom, Steve Borsch, and you got Graham Thickens, Tim Elliott, and Phil Wilson on. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you? Do I sound good?
You sound great.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, you got to use your DJ voice though. So
that's right. Really deep.
So, hey, this is Graham. Tom, how you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Good. I got to tell you, you know, I put the post up a day or two ago on Minovate. I got to tell you, I love that photo of you and Dan on, what is it, on a rooftop?
That was the rooftop of our, we used to actually live in the same apartment building, and it was right when the Glyph came out, and we were kind of assembling prototypes. It was kind of an epic scene.
Yeah, it looks like a nice perch to be working from up there, huh?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
And how important were those two beers that are in the skyline?
Well, there are actually six beers, so they were pretty important. I mean, it wasn't that grueling, but it was we had like 500 3D prints that we had to kind of melt these inserts into. It was this kind of prototype thing, so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're coming to town, and Dan, I think, is already in transit, right?
Yep.
And going to be speaking Tuesday evening at MCAD. Tell us a little bit what you're going to talk about. Indie capitalism, right?
Yeah, indie capitalism. So, you know, we kind of had this kind of crazy launch to our business about 2 years ago. We kind of went from 0 to 60. You know, we were two developers working full time for companies, kind of doing various things. Then we had this idea, and we had a Kickstarter project called The Glyph that kind of launched us. And so we just had to learn kind of everything in about, you know, 3 or 4 months, you know, like how to manufacture something, market it, you know, all this e-commerce stuff. And so, you know, since then we've released a couple more physical products, an iPhone app, and most recently a book. And so the talk is just going to be about, you know, that journey the past 2 years, kind of what happened to us and, you know, how we responded, and then kind of our approach to having a small design business, because it's a little bit different than I think what most people do. And it's kind of amazing because it's kind of a new way to run a business that wasn't really possible until, you know, a couple of years ago. So it's should be fun.
Yeah, amazing. So you guys, did you start out playing with like 3D printers and stuff like that? You know, the MakerBot kind of stuff? Or?
A little bit, yeah. We used a company called Shapeways, and they kind of have a stranglehold on consumer 3D printing right now. But basically you upload a 3D file to them, you pick your material, and they ship it back to you in like 1 to 2 weeks. So we use that because they have really high quality printers. But yeah, that's what we, you know, first of course we did sketches and, you know, kind of thought about the Glyph that way. But then we, you know, we went pretty quickly into 3D prototyping because it's only like, you know, $10 to get something printed. So, you know, you can go from this kind of sketch to this physical object that works, in the case of the glyph, actually works, you know, pretty quickly. So that really helped us kind of bootstrap everything.
Were you able, I'm just curious, were you able to take that 3D printed design and were your manufacturer, whoever you sourced that with, were they able to take that and actually make molds from that?
No. So they, the molds they make are like extremely accurate. They're
okay.
In like 5,000ths of an inch like tolerance. And so, yeah, we produce like a 3D file, like a digital 3D file, like SolidWorks or
okay.
Rhino.
Okay.
And then they take that and make the mold from there. Because, you know, those 3D prints are accurate, but not that accurate. They're probably, their tolerances are probably within the like 100, you know, 100th of an inch or like, you know, 50th of an inch, which just isn't that accurate when it comes down to it.
But it's good enough for you guys to get a feel for the product and say, that feels good. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because it's always surprising. You know, we actually are thinking, if Apple releases the new iPhone, which they most likely will, and, you know, the next week, you know, we're going to have a new glyph for it as fast as we can. And so we've been kind of watching the rumors and, you know, kind of going through the process of working on a new design. And, you know, we had something in the computer that we thought just recently was really great, but we had some 3D prints made and it just turned out to not be exactly what we want. So that jump between, you know, something you see on the computer, even though it's in the 3D, to have it physically in your hand, I mean, it's a completely different thing. So having that capability as being, you know, a small independent shop is pretty amazing.
Well, that's why it was always amazing to me that, you know, car companies would make an entire car out of clay, you know, like the whole thing. I mean, it's like a, like life-size car made out of clay, and they had to do it because you have to be able to look and, you know, get a look, sense of the look and feel and dimensions and all that. And, yeah.
So, hey, Tom, Graham, again, I got a question. What was the turning point when you put the glyph on Kickstarter? And Kickstarter was pretty new then. This, we're talking late 2010, right?
Yeah, it was October 2010, and
yeah,
there was no other. We had no expectations because there had not been a really. There'd been one or two other large projects, and nothing really huge, and definitely nothing in the, you know, product, consumer product space. So we just put it up, and Dan had a blog previous the campaign a little bit and had a little bit of connection with a guy who writes daringfireball.net, John Gruber.
Huge fan of
this kind of, especially Apple stuff. And so he just, you know, put out an email to him just like, hey, you know, we made this thing. And, you know, on the first day, I would say like 4 hours into the campaign, we had already, it's like $35,000 and our goal was $10,000, which, you know, it was really, I mean, John Gruber, he posted it, you know, skyrocketed, and then obviously people caught on from there. But, yeah, we basically owe a lot of, you know, our company to John, which is kind of funny. It's amazing how much influence people have now, like, well, single individual.
Plus, I just read an article, I think it was in Bloomberg Business Week, about Gruber and his, the rumored gross that he makes $500K a year from the stuff,
you know, from all the blog,
from the blog and speaking and so forth. Sure. Hey, I got to tell you that the one thing that I thought was just awesome about the book that you guys have written, it will be exhilarating, about indie capitalism, is the letterpress look and feel of the cover. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Are you guys actually going to print this, do you think?
Hopefully, you know, we'll have to see how it does. I mean, if there's enough demand, we would really love to, because we like trying new things out and kind of just seeing how they work. So we'd love to do a really nice book, but, you know, it just depends if the demand's there, because
yeah,
it doesn't make sense to run like, you know, 100 copies. So we'll just have to see where it goes. But yeah, we'd love to.
So, and we'll have to figure out how we get you to sign our ebooks.
Yeah.
When we see you on Tuesday night. But that's another story, right, Phil?
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, you know, Tom, let me ask you a little something just about the concept and really the lifestyle that you're leading. You know, we talk about, you know,
sort of the new entrepreneur of the industry, you know, basically making your own way. And that's really that, I mean, that, that photo of you guys really kind of brings that home. You're sitting in this, you know, with this beautiful skyline, you know, basically working on your physical product, but you are also doing a lot of different things. You're obviously doing the glyph, and then, you have some other products, but you also write on this subject. What led you guys to this sort of lifestyle, the ability to kind of move and shift constantly from project to project?
Well, I think what it just comes down to is, you know, Dan and I have always liked to make things. And we've always been pretty opinionated about the things that exist in the world. And so, you know, we just really want to make things that we think should exist in the world. I mean, it's basically as simple as that. I mean, we both have some design training, and that helps us a lot, you know, figure out how to approach these problems that we see in the world, and, you know, start, you know, kind of picking away at them. But I mean, it's basically, we just, you know, I guess we think most things are enough in reach nowadays where you can try making something, you know, I mean, it's hard to be an expert at all, you know, at all these things for sure. And we're definitely not, but, I think it's getting easier and easier now to be pretty good at a lot of stuff. And if you just kind of have the confidence in technology and, you know, your design sense, it's fun to just go out there and say, you know, well, I really think there should be a really good wallet that does this, right? And then we just kind of start thinking about it and start prototyping and iterating. And if we get to something that we think other people might like as well, we just go for it. So that's kind of how we're operating. I mean, I think we've been really fortunate thus far to kind of have the things we've introduced in the world to be, you know, picked up by a decent number of people. But I'm sure there will come a point where, you know, we miss the mark and that just doesn't happen. So, but yeah, I think we're just kind of trying to make things that we think should exist. I mean, that's basically our whole motto. If we think it should be out there, then hopefully other people do too.
Well, what is, let me ask you though, about your makeup of, you know, what kind of drives you to do this in the way that you're doing it. And I'm probably just beating a dead horse here, but it's just interesting to me, the shift in the way we work and the way we look at careers for ourselves. And, you know, it used to be, you would be doing that for a large company, but now you're doing it, you know, on a rooftop with a friend and continually evolving. What is it that drove you that way than maybe necessarily the traditional way of earning a living?
Well, you know, it's funny. Dan and I had pretty nice jobs before we started. We both liked our jobs pretty well. We were in, you know, smaller design firms. But, you know, for us, there's just kind of nothing more exciting than working on your own project that you have a lot of control over and you can fuss over and obsess over it. I mean, Dan and I knew that we wanted to do Studio Neat full time, because when the glyph started, we had jobs, and even like 6 months into having the glyph, we still had our full-time jobs. But we knew we wanted to make the switch, because even when at work, you know, we were kind of obsessively thinking about the glyph or things we wanted to do on our own. And for us, that kind of really drove home just that we wanted to work on our own projects. And I think there's just something about having ownership over things and freedom to kind of make your own choices. And I think everyone, you know, kind of likes that. It's just, the amazing thing is now that's possible for a lot more people when it used to, you know, not be. I mean, we wouldn't have had the company we have right now without Kickstarter. I mean, if we weren't kind of rocketed into the business like we were, we would, I'm sure, still be working for other larger companies. So, I mean, it was a mix of luck, but also just that desire to kind of want to do it on your own. And now you can.
Well, one thing I loved about what you put in the book was, you know, is Kickstarter right for you, but also how to estimate cost. Cause you know, I mean, there are so many people that have a great idea, but the thing is, if you put your great idea out there and the market says that's something we want, you can't then say, oh geez, how much is it going to cost? how are we going to price this thing and so on. I mean, you know, it's too late then. Cause that's one thing that we've talked about here before on the podcast, especially since there's a local startup, Smart Things that just exploded with, Kickstarter here over the course of the last couple weeks.
They went over 600K raised.
Yeah. Yeah. They tried to raise 250 and they raised 600K already. They still have 20 days left or 21 days anyway, but it's you know, Kickstarter. What a great way to know whether or not the market cares about what you're doing or not. And you got to be able to figure out what that stuff's going to cost so you can charge appropriately and give people what they expect. So was that a hard thing for you guys?
Well, we, you know, again, I think we got lucky because all of our products so far have been pretty relatively simple and there weren't a lot of unknowns, you know, when we started. But I know that a lot of people do run into problems on Kickstarter when something is more complex or involves electronics, you know. Even if you have done all your due diligence and you've done the research and you've talked to the manufacturers, something can come up, just a little design tweak or a little problem, and it can make one of your capital investments be twice as expensive. Like, for instance, with, you know, molding rubber, the injection molding mold are extremely expensive. They're, you know, start at 20K typically. But you could make a little tweak and it's like, oh, well, this mold has to cost $40,000 now and there's nothing you could do about it.
Oh, geez.
It's just a very difficult thing to do. And because on Kickstarter, you've already kind of pre-sold these things, you're maybe not as experienced as other people, and you're kind of out there on a limb, and you're kind of like, we say it's like jump off the cliff and build the plane on the way down.
Maybe not the best strategy to try to get all the parts out of the box as you're going down.
It makes you have all the parts, right?
Hey, Tom, I got a question for you. Did you know the Kickstarter guys? They're in New York, aren't they?
I had met one of the founders previous to our campaign, but it's funny because, you know, I had never thought, oh, you know, I'm going to Kickstarter campaign one day. But yeah, I had met him before. And then after, you know, we launched and had the success, we have kind of hung out with them a couple times. But yeah, you know, they're growing. Really kind of expanding. But yeah, when we launched, they had like 8 people possibly. Now they have like 40.
Wow. Yeah. What a story.
But it's good. You know, they really have their hearts in the right place. I think, you know, they started out as wanting just a place where artists, you know, filmmakers and people like that could get support. And that's really, I think their heart is still in that. Although, you know, a lot of these, you know, consumer products and design objects get a lot of the press, I still think a vast majority of the projects are either like art practices or films or things like that. So they're really kind of sticking to their guns, which is good to see.
Will all of your products be Kickstarter projects, or do you? You know, have you reached a point where you can, you know, operate like a normal company?
We can operate as a normal company right now to a point. You know, if we said, oh, we're going to build a, you know, something with a lot of electronics in it that needs, you know, $300,000 of startup capital, then we would need to go to Kickstarter again. But for, you know, smaller things, like for instance, the new Glyph, we're going to make a new version of the Glyph for the new iPhone. We're, you know, just doing that completely in-house. So, you know, we will definitely go to Kickstarter again if it suits the project. But yeah, I would say that, you know, for the most part, we have been kickstarted, you know.
Yep. Well, and you're doing the apps now, which doesn't have anything to do with Kickstarter, right?
You know, depending on the app, sometimes it makes sense for a couple different reasons. So, you know, we might, again, you know, if we have come up with an app idea that needs, you know, some bit of capital, or we just want to kind of get some users involved early on, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And you've had the Framographer app out there for a while now. How long has that been?
March, I believe. So that, you know, months roughly. And that interesting journey for us because we had a really great launch. We got a lot of press. And the funny thing about the App Store is you don't know what your sales are until the next day. So we had this launch going and we're like, oh, wow, I wonder like what it's going to be. You know, what's it going to turn into? And it's funny, when we got sales numbers the next day, we talk about this in the book, it was disappointing a little bit. And I think it's because we had heard all these stories of and the App Store and all these people making millions of dollars. But it's kind of our impression that unless your app is in the top, I don't know, 100 or, you know, 50 of the entire store, it's kind of hard to build a sustainable business off of just one or two apps. You really kind of have to have a whole suite of apps, or you got to be kind of very, very top echelon of the App Store, because the numbers just aren't there. It was pretty interesting to us. So, you know, right now we're looking at apps as something that kind of builds on like the ecosystem of our other products and that are just maybe fun things or things we want to try, but not the core of our business at this point, which is a little disappointing because we really like creating software. It's really fun, but
So Adam's still reigning over Bits to a large degree.
I think it's just starting to change. You know, I know like a couple years ago, it would have been a little bit easier, but now, you know, the top of the App Store is all free apps basically that try to get a lot of users and use like ad revenue or, you know, all these different like in-app purchases. And so, you know, I just think the market's changing a lot and I don't know if it's really great for independent developers right now, but you know, that might change and, but it is kind of volatile, so it's pretty interesting to watch all of it. But yeah, I mean, we're definitely happy that we have the bread and butter of these kind of physical products that people can justify spending money on. I think the problem is just that people in the App Store, you know, you get emails all the time, like, you know, people complaining that this app is a dollar, and they use the app, like, every day of their lives. You know, it's like there's this weird, people don't put a really strange amount of value on apps. So it's a
market. Yeah. Hey, I just wanted to mention, just want to be helpful on the Studio Neat website, under Glyph Plus, you should put a tagline that says balloons not included.
So just, yeah, I
want to be helpful.
That's a giver, cool Steve. Photo though. I love that.
Yeah,
photo.
It is.
You're a giver. Well, listen, so, now we're very anxious to see you when you come into town, and we look forward to it. Thanks very much for spending some time with us. It's always exciting to hear somebody doing exciting things and loving doing it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
See you Tuesday, Tom.
It is always exciting stuff. I'm sorry. I find it just fascinating to be able to do so many different things and be, you know, able to kind of move between one thing and another with all those different projects.
So. Well, I'll put the links in the show notes to Studio Neat and just spend a little time there and look at the stuff they do. I mean, just great design. And that, I mean, that's one of the things that, I go to Micro Center as an example and look at iPad stands, which I did the other day. And you look at some of these things and it's like, who designed this? You know, I mean, it's like a couple of guys went to Menards and got some bendable iron, you know, and stuck it together. It's like, come on. So, yeah, this ought to be a fun talk.
Oh, yeah. Design really matters. And you know, an interesting stat, I didn't slip in, but Rob Davis over at MCAD told me that school actually produces more entrepreneurs per capita than the large universities here.
Oh,
even
really?
With their entrepreneurial programs. Yeah.
Huh.
There is a lot of indie capitalism that comes out of design schools and these guys prove it. You know, I mean, they did their thing. I mean, what I find fascinating, they were architecture students, you know, undergrad building model. You know how architects have to build models and all that?
Right.
So they had a lot of hands-on kind of stuff like that, but then they went to design school later. And, you know, it's really an amazing education that, that people can get at these design schools, and at MCAD in particular, one of the top schools in the country. You know, we were over there. When were we over there? When Robert Stevens, and we saw Robert and that cube, what's it called? The cube 3D printer thing.
Right.
Yeah. Remember?
Yep. We were freezing outside while they
Yeah,
were.
And we were walking through that place, and we went up to the coffee shop, and it's like, I remember saying, there's so much creativity in this building. It boggles the mind, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the stuff that they're doing over there is just so cool.
And see, there's a real difference between somebody who is a designer and can create something that didn't exist before, and then a skilled craftsman or, you know, a really good mechanic, if you will. Because I consider myself, you know, with page layout and web design and all that, to be a pretty damn good mechanic, but I'm not a designer. I mean, I'm not a guy that's going to, you know, create something out of nothing. And that's a real skill. It's a skill to be able to, and I think they teach that at MCAD, really. I mean, the Minneapolis College of Art and Design is all about, you know, providing people with the ability to make their innate capabilities flourish from a design standpoint, and how to look and how to have perspective and how to take what you know and what you see and what you want to create and actually make it a reality. And so I think this will be really a kind of an interesting, fun talk. I bet you it's going to be packed.
I think we're going to have a full house. I've been spreading the word to some of my colleagues who are just blown away by it. I mean, and you know, it's a free event too, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get there early.
Yeah, exactly.
So I get a chance to talk to Tom and Dan ahead of time, because I got a feeling they'll be mobbed afterwards.
Right, right. Good. Well, hey, what's coming up, boys? What do we got coming up? We got the Minnesota Developers Conference.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
On the 13th, and then the Minnesota Bloggers Conference, which it's confirmed now. I will be on a podcasting panel with Patrick Roan, who does Minimal Mac and a bunch of other stuff, and then Albert Marugi, who Providence Partners, and he's a podcaster, and so that should be really fun. That's going to be a fun conference. It's shaping up nicely.
And talk about sellout events. That one does, I guess, every year.
Yeah.
Sure it does.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And I don't know, have they dished out their last batch of tickets on Eventbrite yet, or do they? I don't know if they're
checked.
I think it's still, you could still get in, but it's a high demand event.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Yep. And then WordPress MSP on the 27th.
Right.
And then what's this Minnesota search? Who's put this in here?
That's Ward Tongans.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, Wardo is a big-time SEO analytics guy, been working at Medtronic the last few years, and he's organized that event and invited some big-name search speakers from around the country, and is trying to get the buzz going on that. So we're helping him out with that, and hope to be at that event as well.
Well, and then I get these notices from a woman at the Center for Science, Technology, and Public Policy at the U of M, and just got one this morning, fortunately, right before the podcast, about technology breakthroughs that will drive social innovation. And the speaker is Salam Ismail, who's the founding exec director of Singularity University. And if you don't know Singularity University, there's a guy named Ray Kurzweil, the inventor and scientist who created Singularity University, about how to bring in the best and the brightest to not only speak to students and teach students, but also for students to be able to sort of take what they do to the next level. And in fact, a young woman up the street here, Monica Ebert, who is studying to be an astronaut and was graduated and went to Singularity University. And just so I know a lot more about it than I probably should, but I'll tell you what, this ought to be a good event as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And then Mima Summit. Oh, man, that's right. October 10th.
Coming up on October 10th, Hilton Hotel downtown.
We'll fabulous.
Be
here, so yep.
It'll be a good time. So look for that. See what we get. Guy Kawasaki speaking and one other.
Steve's favorite, the gaming lady.
Oh yeah,
that's Jane McGonigal.
Yeah. McGonigal, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard her speak now. A couple. I saw her at O'Reilly's eTech, and then out at Web 2.0, and she does a lot of really cool stuff.
Yeah, that's the keynote I'm looking forward to.
Yeah,
not so much.
Yeah.
Was she at that eTech that you and I were at in San Diego? Was
yeah.
that the one?
Yep, oh, she was. Yeah, yeah,
God,
yeah.
I'd forgotten all about her. Yeah. Seeing her there. Yeah. Yep.
So that's she's really pushing the envelope now on gaming, game theory, and how it can be incorporated into not only creativity and innovation exercises within companies, but also how you can use it personally and taking a lot of those concepts, because it's there seems to be a lot of thought about the fact that this stuff really dovetails and works together with respect to the way gaming works, that you don't learn and then go take a test like you do in traditional education or traditional training. When you're playing a game, you get instant, constant feedback on every single thing you do. Mm-hmm. And you fail and you win and you fail and you win and you succeed and you fail and yada, yada, yada during the course of the game. And you get better and better and better as you're actually doing it. And everyone knows that applied learning's always worked. You know, if you want to learn something, don't read the whole manual and then sit down with the software. Nobody does that anyway. They just jump right in. But the whole gaming thing is all about jumping in and doing it anyway.
Cool.
And then she's geeky Twin Cities is the 19th and 20th.
Yep.
Beautiful.
So, lots going on. So it's that, you know, we've definitely gotten past that slow period of time.
Yeah, it's going to start happening now.
Yeah, it's the back to school mentality. Things start getting really busy and the conference schedule picks up a lot. By the way, Ray Kurzweil is going to be launching his new book on stage at Demo in Santa Clara, October 1st to 3rd.
Nice.
So I'm hoping you're going to be there, right? There for that.
Okay. Good, good, good.
Sounds good.
All right.
All right. Well, lots happening, and we'll catch up with more of it next week. Of course, we'll probably be talking about Apple at that point, so just a little warning.
That's a good bet.
Yeah. All right.
Just saying. But otherwise, we'll see you next week on
the Minovate Gang podcast.
Oh, nice. Later. Nice.
Take care, gents.
Have a good weekend. Yes, you know how to pick that thing. Do in the mandolin boogie. Mandolin boogie. Do the mandolin boogie just eight string all night long.
night long.